Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello, and welcome to An Adventure in History. We are once again so glad you're joining us, and we get to talk all things and other things, including cider.
But the real question is, should we be doing an Irish brogue?
Oh, I don't know. What does our guest think?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
I wanted some kind of like, isn't it always appropriate to do an Irish brogue?
Yes, always.
We have the owner of the Ilwaco Cider Company here with us. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Vanessa Karnofsky. Thank you.
That's it.
Glad you're here. We'll say that a couple more times.
Did she say it right?
She did. She got it. She's spot on.
But we're going to talk some other things first.
All right. Yeah. Actually, we do have one commercial, Thursday Night Talks.
Yes.
TNT, Thursday Nights Are Dynamite. We are lecture series. It is always the third Thursday of the month at Fort George Brewery in the Level Showroom.
Apparently, I need to come and do the introductions.
You do. Because
I would be given a script and I would introduce you correctly.
Perhaps. I have a spiel, and there was at one point where the crowd, the regular crowd, could do the whole spiel without me. I could just
over and over
say, how many buildings does this rogue study operate? What's our budget? And they would shout out the answers.
That's good,
I hear it like every month.
Right.
Okay. But we got the Liberty factories, you know, the Liberty ships that were made in Portland and basically, you know, won the big war. So we're going to talk about the factories and a lot of women. You know, this is, you know, Rosie the Riveter, and we can do it. So,
all right.
So it's going to be a good talk. So doors open at 6 and the program starts at 7.
Okay, good. All right. I have a word. I think we might know this word.
Okay.
That's your hint.
All right.
Rapscallion.
Oh, rapscallion. You got to say it right.
Rapscallion.
Yes.
It's a lost word, historic word, but maybe one used in Mac's repertoire?
See, I have used that word, actually, but I'm worried, actually, with you looking at a dictionary of sorts that perhaps I will not have the exact, but it's a bit of a rogue, a scoundrel.
Yes.
But a likable scoundrel.
A mischievous or rascally person. A scoundrel.
There we go.
You got it. I think this is your second time. Good job.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh,
good. Did you hear? It's like she's talking to one of her kids.
Yeah.
Good job.
Gold star. Yes, yeah.
I think you got to get more because that one's out there. That one's still used. So.
Yes, but that's kind of cool too if it's considered a historic word.
And it's fun to say.
It is. Rapscallion. Yes. Don't be a rapscallion.
All right. So these are because this is going to be a good show, so we should get right to it.
Yes.
These are the history highlights, things that happen tomorrow. So as always, icebreakers over your cider, or if you're just chatting to somebody, or work or family or whatever. So these are things that happen on March 17th, 1778. Britain declares war on France due to the French alliance with the U.S.
Oh,
France coming in, helping us, and Britain's got to declare war on them, too.
Yeah.
All right, 1845. I thought about making this a history highlight of the day. 1845, rubber band is patented by Stephen Perry of London. Rubber bands.
It is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And how important, I was trying to think, like, okay, if we didn't have rubber bands, would society be that much different?
Less ponytails.
I was going to say, as a person who wears a hairband, which is just one step away from a rubber band, I love them. Yes.
Okay. When I go to the bank to get change, and I get like the stack of ones, they always want rubber bands or paper clips.
Oh, for them to use. Okay.
Yeah,
or paddle ball. How about paddle balls? Got that rubber band, you know?
There we go.
Kids' toys.
That's right. It'd be so different. So maybe we'll vote and whether this should have been the history highlight. 1854, the first parkland is purchased by a U.S. city.
Ooh.
In Worcester, Massachusetts.
Interesting.
Worcester.
Yeah. Do you have anything else on that one?
I don't.
Okay. First parkland. I like that.
First parkland purchased by a U.S. city.
Right. Yeah.
So way to go. I never thought I'd say these words out loud. My brother used to live there, but I never thought I'd say this out loud. Way to go, Worcester. If they're listening, well done. I suddenly like your city.
There you go.
All right. Although I got nothing against Worcester. It was good visits there.
Thanks.
1884, John Joseph Montgomery makes the first glider flight at Otay, California.
Okay.
Gliders.
Yeah, terrifying.
I don't think it's the same little gliders that we sell up at the Column.
Right. But it's not that much of a difference other than you attach your body to it.
Yeah.
Right?
A little bigger.
Yeah. Ugh.
But I like that it's the first glider flight at Otay, California, and I like to misinterpret that and think that it's the actual first flight that was there in Otay, not the first glider flight overall.
Right.
But I suspect it's overall.
Yes.
All right. 1894, U.S. and China sign a treaty preventing Chinese laborers from entering the U.S.
Oh.
The Chinese Exclusion Acts.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not a great. Yeah.
1930, construction begins on the Empire State Building.
Cool.
I love the Empire State Building. And we've already decided you've never been.
I haven't.
Have you been to?
I have, yes.
And is it glorious?
It is. Wonderful? No. No, the view is amazing.
Well, in the movies, right?
Yes.
I mean, An Affair to Remember, then what's all the others.
Well,
All the others.
I think modern people would think of Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle, yes.
Yeah. But I like the elevator doors. Maintenance on them.
Yeah.
It's really kind of cool. All right. 1990, Lithuania rejects Soviet demand to renounce its independence. Poor Lithuania.
Yeah.
All right. 1992, apartheid comes to an end in South Africa.
Yay,
indeed. But the thing I think had the most impact in history, more than rubber bands, even though I thought about it, 461.
Okay.
Always makes you laugh, doesn't it?
It does.
461, St. Patrick dies.
I mean, it did have quite an influence.
See, in terms of like just the guy himself, I mean, I think if you did a poll, you'd be hard pressed to who is this guy again in modern, but we all know St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
So
across the world. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's kind of why I put it down.
But we all use rubber bands.
We do.
I don't know.
to make our St. Patrick's Day outfits.
Yeah. There's no segue here other than you could spend a really good St. Patrick's Day at the Awako Cider Company.
Ooh,
that's true. That's but I do
want any day. Oh,
but
yeah.
I do want to back up quickly. Okay. Am I outvoted then? Do the two of you vote that rubber bands have made more of an impact on history than St. Patrick?
Oh, no. St. Patrick, for sure.
I would be okay with that.
Yeah, I know. I think rubber bands would somehow, like something else would come along, and there's only one St. Patrick.
String.
String.
It wouldn't have been as easy, but
stretchy string. That's true. Elastic. Yes.
All right. Sorry, you were doing a great segue.
I was, yes. But we do have Vanessa Karnowski here with the Awako Cider Company. Thank you again for listening to our banter and participating. But we want to talk about you. So let's go back first. And where did you grow up? And as a kid, what were you doing?
I was just drinking a whole lot of cider all the time.
No, you weren't as a kid. Even like as a teenager, that was not your beverage of choice, was it?
No, I mean, I was raised in the States, so of course you can't drink until you're 21. Wink, wink. I grew up in all over the place. I was born in Nebraska City, Nebraska. But at infancy, what we relocated to Southern California. So I've lived as far south as San Diego and as far north as Crescent City, California. And then after high school, went to live in Vancouver, Washington, because I went to culinary school at Western Culinary Institute in Portland.
Oh, fun.
And from there, worked a few few different areas in Oregon, like Eugene and McMinnville, and then eventually found myself on the Long Beach Peninsula. And, you know, I had no idea that was going to be the end of my travels, but I've been there 24 years now.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
A girl from Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes.
Okay, so let's back up. Nebraska, because there's a lot to unpack there. So in Nebraska, do you have any memories of Nebraska?
I was one.
That's what I was thinking.
But I've been back because I still have family in Percival, Iowa, and my older sister and I were both born in Nebraska City. So we've traveled back with my father, who was also born in Nebraska City, and gone to the hospital we were born at. And, you know, when you put city behind a name of, you know, you think it's going to be large, I don't know. And I got, so when I went to Nebraska City, I was like, oh my goodness, this is just like, you know, it's not much bigger than Long Beach, Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very small and, you know, with one main road.
Very flat. No hills.
Very flat. You know what else is there, though, is the Arbor Day Foundation. And I had no idea. I don't know if you guys have, like, fond memories of, you know,
getting the tree.
Yeah, and the little commercials that you would hear in the 80s from the Arbor Day Foundation. And I remember signing up for it, like, when I was in elementary school, signing up and getting trees. And anyway, so...
It's the fourth best holiday.
So when we went back to visit, of course, we went and had a lovely meal at the Foundation restaurant there and
wow.
and toured the grounds. And yeah.
So basically you grew up in California.
Yes.
You would say, okay. So you decide to go to culinary school. So obviously you think that's going to be your career.
Yes.
Okay. What do your parents do then? Are they encouraging of this, or are they like, why would you want to do that?
You know what? They were both encouraging. They were both small business owners. My mother owned a consignment store, and my dad has always run small grocery stores. And so they weren't like scared of me doing something that wasn't going to make money as long as I worked hard. That was kind of the philosophy, is you work hard and you'll do good things. So it was kind of, and it was a trade, you know, so we're all really happy when our kids have a trade that, you know, and you can't really go wrong with cooking. You really can't, you know, your friends hang out at your house, you know, everybody wants you to help with the parties they're throwing. Yeah. You know? So no, my parents were very supportive. Yeah.
And what was the appeal to you? Was it just what you just said, or what was the, as your a young adult and you're like, here's what I think I want to do with my life. How did you zero in on that? What was the appeal?
You know, that's a good question, but I have thought about this in the past. And so I know it has to do with my father's mother. Laverne is her name, and she's no longer with us, but she was a wonderful cook and owned her own cafe in Nebraska City, Nebraska. And so growing up, whenever we would go to grandma's house, obviously, you know, we'd have that country, that Nebraska cooking.
Yeah.
The fried chicken was never better, you know. You know, especially when we'd have holidays at her house, the feedback from the people around the table. And I love that. The people were just so grateful. You know, and as they enjoyed the food and they said it with their lit up faces and their smiles and their just, you know, compliments. And so I knew from probably middle school on that I definitely wanted to learn how to cook and do it well. And so culinary school was always at the top of my list in order to accomplish that. Yep.
Okay. So you moved to Oregon. Or you moved to Vancouver.
Vancouver, Washington.
Went to culinary school. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that path. Where'd that path take you?
You know, just taking that, well, what is it, the TriMet? Taking the yes. TriMet the from Vancouver into Portland, you know, every weekday. And then walking from like Salmon Street over to Western Culinary. It's about a 7 or 8 block walk. And, you know, at the time, especially in the winter, it was like, oh, this is lame. And, you know, and I was only 17.
Oh, my
I was
goodness.
Young. And I'm young for my class. In California, you can start school at 4, kindergarten at 4. So I was young for my class. I was young for my culinary class as well. I mean, while everybody was going to bars or working at restaurants, I also worked at a restaurant, but I was like new to working in a restaurant. You know, I was just young. Sure. I was a prep cook. And so, anyways, it was very interesting because I came from Crescent City, California, and now I was living in a real city, and taking the transit into an even bigger city, and walking solo, and usually in your chef wear. So you'd have your houndstooth pants on and your chef coat.
And the clogs, right?
People were looking at you like, oh, we know where she's going, you know. but no, it was a really great experience. I met some fantastic people. And then, you know, I had a great teacher who said to me one day, because, you know, sometimes when you go to school, there's people around you that are like naysayers, like, oh, I could have gotten a better education here, or I could have learned this just by working in a restaurant, or, you know. I had a teacher in response one time say, you know, sometimes you get out what you put into it. And I know that's nothing, like, that's not mind-blowing to say that, but to me, as a 17-year-old, I was like, well, you know, I really thought about it. And I was like, okay. So I stayed later and I'd go in earlier and I would go into classes and help out in classrooms that I wasn't assigned to yet in the off times. So I really took that to heart. Like, you really do get more out of something if you put more in, you know, spend more time, ask more questions.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm a little fascinated by culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
When you go in, do you choose, like, hey, I want to learn how to be a pastry chef, or I want to just learn how to Italian, or are they teaching you all of those things? How do you become specialized, or why do you become specialized if you do?
Mm-hmm. And they do. There's different pathways you can take. There's the business side. There's the a la carte, running a line side, being a chef, and the restaurant management. And then, like you said, being a pastry chef, there's lots of different directions you can go in. And what you do is you get your basics. They start you out with knife skills and measurement skills. I'm not kidding.
I love it. See, I want to take the class now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Western Culinary Institute is a classically trained culinary school. So it was a lot of French cuisine in the beginning, like just learning how to make a bechamel, you know, how, but like I said, like just basics. And then from there, once you have the groundwork, you could kind of pick different pathways. If I wanted to be more in the baking area, I could take more classes that explored that. If I wanted to be more in the fine cuisine area, I could do that. If I wanted international, I could do that. So I went fine cuisine and a little bit of international cuisine and a little bit of restaurant management. That was my pathway.
Okay. So out of culinary school then, what's next?
Culinary school, I relocated a couple times in Oregon. We were in McMinnville. We were in Eugene. I worked at some really great restaurants. One of them was Golden Valley Brewery, which I was going to mention during this interview, that Golden Valley Brewery was the first place I ever worked where I saw production, like micro brewery production, and fell in love with it and really wanted to do that. But I was only 20. So I couldn't work. So I worked on the line there in McMinnville. But I got to know the brewers, and I was like, oh man, when I'm 21, I really want to be in there, you guys. I want to, you know, just learn this skill. And and then unfortunately we moved before I got that opportunity, and it wouldn't be for another 15 years before I would get to explore that side.
So during that 15 years, you ended up out here.
Yes. So eventually, yeah, in 2004, we moved to the peninsula. I worked at 42nd Street, was my first job.
Oh, I love
it. Peninsula. And then I worked at a place called Polly's Bistro, which was down on the Port of El Waco. It's no longer there. And I worked at Discovery Coast Inn, had a cafe. And then the Lost Rue.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I was the first chef to open the Rue. And then I did my own. In that time, too, I also did catering and opened Beach House Catering and got to learn a lot about that, which is definitely a skill for all my chef friends out there. No, it's really hard work. And That's probably why it's so hard to find people to cater. But and then I found my way into the private sector a little bit, and mostly because, you know, once you start having children, working kitchens isn't very family friendly. You end up, you know, you go in the afternoon and you work late into the evening, and you're always working weekends. So it's, and any holiday that your kids have off, restaurants are busy. So I went into the private sector mostly so I could have set hours and benefits, you know, health benefits. And then I realized, like, well, there's this whole other side where, and I actually ended up working at Clean. It's no longer there. It was a drug and alcohol treatment center, ironically. And I was their kitchen manager. And again, I got that same positive feedback loop from all of our clients there, because they were still eating wonderful food and being treated really well, despite the situation they might have found themselves in, you know. And and it wasn't just eating. It was like having healthy cuisine, you know. There was a lot of thought put into bringing people, you know, detoxing folks and keeping them healthy. So from there, I started working for the county as the Wellspring coordinator, which is a community outreach coordinator, putting on family events, promoting social norms, positive social norms. And, you know, so I got to know the community really well. But even working in kitchens, I was getting to know the community, because people just, like, you know, when you have a relationship to food, people want to know more about you.
You do. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of this was building. It's crazy in hindsight now, like, everything I did was helping build a more diverse foundation of fans, almost, you know, like, when we finally opened a Waco Cider Company, it was like, oh my gosh, everybody was so excited for Jared and I and what was to come, and couldn't wait. Like, there was just this, yeah, I don't know. I just felt like it was like a giant family. And so, you know, we just were overwhelmed by it all. Like,
so let's talk about the space you chose too, because everything I've just heard is about the community, and you chose this space, and it's now beautiful, right?
Uh-huh.
So how did you find it? How did you get in there? And tell us where you are exactly, so people can find you.
Yeah, we're in downtown in Waco. We're east, just east of the light. Can't really miss us if you're heading in from Chinook, you know, and going to Waco. You're going to see us. We have a bright green building. And then a sign that says Waco Cider Company. And the building used to be, it used to be a multitude of things, but, you know, it's a part of the history there. So, you know, it was a mercantile store. It was a women's clothing shop. It was an antique store. It was a roofing company. And then when we took it over, it was part antique shop and part storage unit facility.
I was going to say it felt, and I was there after the renovation, because it's beautiful. I mean, it's really hard to describe, but I mean, this was warehousey, right?
Uh-huh.
Storage. So you brought in these beautiful, just beautiful wood and everything. But tell us about how you got to, this needs to be a cider company.
Okay. So Jared and I decided we would like to try our hand at small business ownership. And something that he really wanted me to choose something that I was going to enjoy doing. And he thought that was going to be opening a restaurant. And though I do love cooking, again, owning a restaurant is not always family friendly. It's a lot of long hours, especially if you're the owner. And I had seen that. So I was like, you know, I want to use my skills, but I don't want it to be something that that after a couple years that I feel like I'm just barely making it and dragging myself into work every day and, you know, and burnout. And It's like, I want it to be something that is an asset to the community and you know, it goes towards my character as being like more outgoing and, you know, so the first thought we had is let's open a brewery. And then,
interesting.
Yeah. And again, I was thinking about Golden Valley Brewery and I was like, oh yeah, I always wanted to work with, in a microbrewery. So, and then that thought went away almost immediately because we're like, no. We want to add. We don't want to compete. We want to add. And we already had a wonderful brewery right down the street, North Jetty, and a wonderful breweries in Astoria at the time. So I was like, no. Let's consider cider. And we just kind of like kicked it around for a little bit. And I was like, yes, no, cider's the way to go. It fits me. It's like, you can be creative.
Yep.
There's a lot of whimsy,
you're still cooking.
People are still gathering and enjoying themselves. You know, eventually I could do some food if I'd like to, you know, so there's all these different avenues I could still explore. It really, like, as soon as we started discussing it, it was like the perfect fit. And that's why we chose cider. Not because I had any experience besides, you know, doing small batches from our own personal apple trees, once a season. Like, that's it. That's all the experience. So if we had more time, I'd talk about the learning curve because that's there's a lot of hilarity.
Of the large scale batch process, because you have multiple. I mean, what are your, and you have seasonal and then you have what's your staples?
We now have of core five. We started out with four. Now it's five. We have Solitary Euphoria, which is our session cider. It's a botanical cider. It's dry. Columbia Fog is our take on the London Fog lattes. Orange, vanilla, lavender. Semi-dry. We have Spring Rider Cran, which has become our flagship cider, which is made with local peninsula cranberries.
I love that.
Yes. And late harvest and regular harvest cranberries. And the late harvest ones are sweeter. So, and then we have our sister berry cider, which is, since you know I was born in Nebraska, this will make more sense. It's elderberry because of Nebraska, and it's cranberry because I live in the Pacific Northwest, and it's sisters because my sister and I were born in Nebraska. So it's sister berry, you know, it has, and my maiden name is Ellsbury.
Oh, I love that.
So there's a lot of, there's a whole story there. And I'm missing one now. What did I say? What am I missing?
Oh, it'll come to you. But they can go to your website. But I also wanted to point out, too, it's a cidery, but it's open to all ages. Uh-huh. I mean, you've made this a very family-friendly venue. I've brought my 4-year-old at the time, my 9-year-old. There's live music.
Yes.
I mean, this is somewhere where your kids can be and my kids.
Yes.
So how can people find you online or the address, too?
So iwakociderco.com is our website. We're on Facebook at Iwako Cider Company. We're on... let's see.
Well, Instagram.
Instagram. Okay. That's it. I'm so sorry.
All the social media. Yeah. And you guys are really great on social media, too, about advertising what bands are playing. You have local bands and all that fun stuff.
Yes.
So.
And we're still building out a lot of that social media. That is not my wheelhouse. It's more Jared's wheelhouse than mine.
Oh, that's interesting.
Funny enough. Yeah. No, he's really good about posting things and I am not. So I'm more like get in there. Like I like to get in the nitty gritty and, you know, and don't distract me. I'm, you know, creating.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your creating. Thank you for joining us. Vanessa Karnowski, owner of the Iwako Cider Company.
Got it.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to Adventures in History bonus. So talk a little bit about the learning curve, because I'm curious.
He wants to hear this large batch process.
Oh my goodness, you guys. I mean, I kind of mentioned it earlier when I was speaking to you upstairs, but you know, we have less of the chaos now that we're about 9 months in. We just opened June 29th, so we're not even a year yet. And So the first couple of batches, there's a lot of like fire hose moments. Ugh. And like, if you can picture that, you know, just like cider hitting the ceiling.
I could smell it.
Yeah, just opening the wrong valves at the wrong time. Things are under pressure, you guys. So if you're moving things in and out of tanks, I have one tank that's a little wonky on top because I forgot to open the valve on top. And so pressure changes, like, you know, and I really fretted and freaked out about these things in the beginning. And we had a great consultant. His name is Nick Gunn. And I could call him if I had any questions. And he would say, you're not the first, and you're going to have to get over this. This is not going to end. This isn't the end of the world. Like, just, it's okay. Take a deep breath. But yeah, it was really hard on myself those first couple batches if I didn't get things just the way I wanted to.
And did you go and visit other places? Are you just looking online? Are you buying the equipment and then just getting the directions from it? I mean, how do you actually learn how to do this?
Well, yes, we did visit places. We definitely did our research, you know, as, you know, one would, just going to cideries and enjoying it and watching and talking with people. We definitely did that. But I didn't do an internship, you know, so, and all the equipment's slightly different. I'd never worked with tri-clamps before.
Nope, no idea.
You know, I didn't really understand hose sizes and, you know, why I might need adapters or, you know, it's so there's all these things that I kind of had to keep talking to our consultant about. And he, you know, we did a lot of video calling when he would kind of walk me through things. But I had to learn it, and I kind of just had to learn it by doing it. Mm-hmm. And I just tried to take my time. We got our first batch of juice in April of last year, and I didn't blend the cider until May. So I got the batch of juice in April. I took my time fermenting it, getting it, you know, to the stage I wanted, and then I took my time ordering ingredients and blending that cider because it's actually pretty stable for a while. And I needed to develop my recipes. I had recipes, but it's quite a bit different to like say, hey, I'm going to have this in it and this and this in it. I mean, as a chef, I kind of knew how to like, of course, expand recipes to fit the batch I was doing, but you lose some things in translation. So adding a little bit more of this or, oh no, less of that, you know. So all of that took place in May last year. And then we started having mini soft openings with friends, family, restaurant owners, and didn't officially open until June 29th.
So since farm to table is such a big thing, are you aware of where you're getting, and you've already answered one question, so I'm not going to sound really stupid. I'm not going to say your apples, your juice. Do you know, like, hey, it's coming from Eastern Washington, or it's coming, I mean, or are you just some massive corporation that sells you stuff?
No, we get our juice from Ryan's Juice in Hood River. If you've ever seen Ryan's Juice cider in supermarkets, they make a really delicious blend. They actually do a few different blends, but I buy their cider blend. It's outstanding, and they're great people to work with. And I've gone and I've walked around the factory, and I've met the salespeople, and their truck drivers are great. It's called King Trucking. So we buy the juice from Hood River, from Hood River Apples.
I love that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, all Northwest ingredients.
Yes.
With the addition of the Nebraska.
Yes.
Elderberry.
Yes.
That's awesome. And when you think about adding the ingredients, I mean, who all gets to be a taster? I mean, obviously you do, but who else gets to have an opinion that counts?
Oh,
because everyone has an opinion, yeah. Right?
I know. Sometimes people are just lucky if they happen to be there and I'm creating something, that I've never created before. I always ask for feedback from people. It's usually myself. My daughter is my assistant brewer. So that's Mackenzie. And so it's usually myself or Mackenzie or Jared that will initially taste. But if I need additional feedback, I'll go to our other tap tenders or whoever's sitting at the bar.
I love that. And then you have a club as well, because we're members of the club. The mug club, right?
Yeah, the crafters club.
There we go. The crafters club.
You get your own personal mug. Yep. Made by local potter Randy McClellan. And they're awesome. They're like between 21 and 23 ounces because, you know, if you're doing things by hand, they're not always consistent. Right. They're wood fired in nacelle. So they have just really great detail and coloring on them. And anyways, you get to come in and walk right over to your cubby and take your mug and go up to the counter, and you basically get a 20 ounce pour for the cost of a 16 ounce pour.
Yeah. Worth it.
Okay. And we got to end with, what is your favorite that you create?
Oh, yeah.
I know it's like asking your favorite child, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
You know, Columbia Fog is the one that I started out going, this is the one. This is going to be the one. And I still stand by that.
And why? Why is that one the best?
Because I think people enjoy the mixture of botanicals and fruit, and then it's comforting. I mean, the vanilla notes and then it's got oolong tea in it, you know, and I think also tea is very popular. It's always been popular, but it's even more popular now. So, you know, the orange, the lavender, the vanilla, the oolong tea, it's just, even if you're not a cider drinker and just a tea drinker, you'd want to try it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for the bonus listeners who stayed on with us to hear a little bit more.
We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.